Chancellor, it is December 1979, a constitution underway for the Islamic Republic of Iran, led by the Ayatollah Khomeini, who has returned from exile in Paris. But there are other ayatollahs we need to speak of. In Brenda Schaefer's new book, Iran is More Than Persia, Ethnic Politics in Iran, there is the Ayatollah Shariat Madari, who speaks for the Azerbaijani at the time. Eventually, he'll be persecuted, house arrested, and die in 1986. But he objected right away to what he perceived to be a Persian-centric, Tehran-dominated decision-making by the Constitution. And he was a brave man to speak up. Did others from the other ethnic groups also speak up, Brenda?
The story of the Islamic Republic was that after Khomeini returned to Iran, his emissaries, you know, basically they reached out to all the major ethnic groups and they offered them, you know, language rights, cultural rights, schools. And so if you think about it, they offered this because they knew that this was attractive to the minority. So it tells you something about, you know, those who claim that, oh, they don't care about their languages anymore and it's not important to them. They try to seduce them to support the regime with language rights and school rights to how to educate their children in their native languages. But the minute they gained power and they crystallized their power, they take away this offer of these rights. And this created a huge rebellion among, you know, most of the ethnic minorities. When you read the history books of the revolution, Islamic revolution in 79, you hardly hear these stories, like the uprising of the Ahwazi Arabs, uprising of the Turkmen, very fierce, you know, hundreds killed. Kurds in Iran, it really took a decade. While the Iran-Iraq war is going on, you know, Tehran is battling also its own Kurds, you know, really a decade of suppression. And the Azerbaijanis, maybe it was quicker because they really managed to decapitate the leadership, like Shariat Madari, like his family members, there was even an uprising in the air base in Tabriz, you know, that members of the military that didn't want to join the Islamic revolution. So, it's kind of interesting. I saw there was an ABC correspondent in Tabriz during the uprising, and he correctly points out this is an uprising of Azerbaijani Turks, and they see their leader as Shariat Madari.
This is December 6, 1979. Tabriz was bombed by the regime. Please continue.
Right. Yeah. So there was a foreign journalist covering it. I was thinking, today would there be a foreign journalist, you know, in a place like Tabriz? Would he know the ethnic composition? I mean, thinking in some ways, the regime and its sort of counterparts in foreign academia really sort of succeeded to create this myth that they're all Persians and they're all happy, right? But at the revolution, I mean, again, there was American journalist there that understood the ethnic mosaic and that it was an important part of the revolution.
Let's mention immediately, because you referenced it, the regime promised and then didn't deliver. Much the same way that in another time, Lenin promised bread and land and didn't deliver. So what they also didn't deliver was languages in schooling. And not only did they not deliver it, but I learned from you, they actively suppress it, so much so that birth certificates today are policed for ethnic names. This has been going on since 1979. We have the deaths. 10,000 Kurds were killed by the regime. All of these people were suppressed, but the fear of language, knowing that it's spoken Azerbaijani or Kurdish, or the Kurds speak their language at home. Does the regime know this? Because their actions are futile, given no one's relented in speaking their home language.
So yeah, I would say that maybe there was a technological era where, without mass communications, where you could change the predominant language in an area, but technology has changed that. I mean, look at the kind of irony with this wave of anti-regime demonstrations. It's on the name of the Persian name of a Kurdish woman whose parents couldn't recognize the name that they gave to her. You know, so if you look at all the hashtags and all the pictures, it's in her name that was in Masha, that was in her document, but that was not the name that her parents and her friends, you know, referred to her by. But yeah, all the minorities talk about, you know, they go to register a baby and a birth certificate, and if the name seems too Turkish, too Kurdish, they can't, you know, even Arabic names, if they're not classic, you know, Quran names, that, you know, they often can't register the names. There's even the Ministry of Interior works to police actually the use of Persian, you know, in like store signs and in names of television shows. And you know, so if you really had no language problem, you know, they say, well, everyone, that all the people of Iran just adore the Persian language. But if this was true, why would they have to actually suppress the minority languages? So, in Iran, people are not allowed even the most basic right of, you know, educating their children in their native languages. And this is going to be a problem going forward with the anti-regime movement, because I think if the minorities are not, you know, allowed even the most basic right of education in their language, it will be hard to see that the anti-regime movement stays unified.
We have a minute on this point. Rouhani made promises about ethnic schools. What happened, Brenda?
So he made, like many of the during the election periods in Iran, they make promises to for language rights, which again illustrates that the assessment that this is important to people. And Rouhani seemed to be even more sincere
this
than
is two presidents ago, right? Not the current
two presidents.
President.
Yeah, is that Rouhani seemed sincere about this. And what happened is they started opening up these language centers, and there were such huge lines for these course, you know, after school courses in the native languages, that they quickly shut them down because they realized that this was too dangerous to the regime.
And so Rouhani, having made these promises, then recanted the promises, much like the original Ayatollah made promises to the ethnic minorities and didn't follow through. I'm speaking with Brenda Schaefer. We're looking at the Islamic Republic of Iran's revolution, which is no revolution, it's persecution by an imperial center. And when we come back, what about the imperialism of the Persians? What about the Ayatollah's suppression of the minorities? What is to be done about moving towards a democracy? The book is Iran is More Than Persia. Brenda Schaefer, the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.